Interesting.
Interviews with haunting gurus. Woo!
He's been a haunt actor, prop fabricator, set dresser, production designer, escape room entrepreneur, and musician. So what does this guy not do? We're going to find out in a minute. Joining me is John Cook from Not Scary Farm. What's up, John?
Mr. Baker, how are we doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. And yes, all should call me Mr. Baker from now on. I'm getting up. I'm getting up in years. I'm turning 50 in a couple of months. It's scary shit, man. Not good. Not good.
Yeah, I broke the 30 mark. I mean, I'm like, what happened to my life?
Yeah, it's crazy. You think it's downhill. and then you hit 50. Yeah, it's all right. I still feel like I'm 20. Mentally I do. I know physically.
Well, that's all that matters, right?
Yeah, physically I'm breaking down, but mentally, yeah, I'm like 21. So John, your main gig now and has been pretty much for the past 14 years working at Knott's.
Yeah, I started as a scare actor in 2005 at Not Scary Farm.
What was your first character? Do you remember who, you know, what you played?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I think they typecasted me there. I was casted as a delinquent punk rock zombie in this really cool like zombie high school maze that they had back in the day called Hatchet High.
Was that like a reoccurring character that you kind of did? They keep kind of working you as that character?
No, I just think I look like a shithead, so they put me in that one. They got perfect role for this guy. A delinquent zombie. Perfect.
Yeah, that's always scary where they're like, this is what I think you would be, and you're like, oh no. That's what you think? Man, come on.
Right. Just the role for you. Yep.
So you started out as a scare actor playing the punk delinquent.
Yeah. Now, also a cool story of how I started at Knott's. I went and applied to be a scare actor, and I was actually turned away for whatever reason. Something didn't gel there, and they actually turned me away as an actor. And I had a buddy who worked in the carpentry department building the haunted houses, and I was definitely determined to work this event. So I actually took a job first as a carpenter. And then once I got my position there building the mazes, in my uniform, I just walked back over to the staffing center. I was like, oh, yeah, they sent me over here to get a role, you know, in the event as an actor. And then they just penciled me in as a delinquent zombie.
You were doing construction and haunt acting for the first couple of years you were there, or?
For about the first 4 years, I did both carpentry and the scare acting. And then I, from there, transferred into, they have a prop fabrication / set dressing department. So I transferred into there, and then I did that for a couple more years. And then eventually I just went full into the production side, and I stopped doing the scare acting stuff. Just to kind of focus more on production and the management side of things.
When you're working as a carpenter there, you're doing a lot of a lot of the rough cuts, and it's like being a finished carpenter versus being
they actually have a scene shop where they have finished carpenters working, and those are the guys very, very skilled at carpentry, and they're building the facades and kind of the more intricate set pieces. And I was more on the in the field install crew, so we were kind of just like kind of putting the floor decks down, putting the 4x8 walls up, and doing more of that kind of stuff.
Where is the bulk of this construction taking place? It is right there on property. They have like a hangar there, or
kind of looks like a hangar. Yeah, it's just a big warehouse spot there in the back lot of the theme park there. That's where they have their scene shop, which has carpentry, paint department, and an effects department. So any of the pneumatics or any of that are fabricated out of there. And then they also have a separate prop shop where they're doing more of life casting and running molds, and all that stuff happens there, as well as all the storage of all the different props and stuff.
The mazes are almost hangar type buildings and set with facades on them, or something to that effect.
Most of them, correct? Yeah, most of them are in these bigger warehouses that are that were built in the back lot there specifically for the haunted houses. And that's why when we build a maze in there, we can roll the doors up, lock it down, and then it's considered storage for the year. And that way we don't have to break it down or anything. And that appeases the city and the fire department on that side of stuff. And then there are a couple mazes that are still inside the park, and those have to come completely down every year and put back up.
How many mazes are happening in one season?
Around 13 attractions.
How many scare zones?
4 scare zones. And we also do some rethemed rides as well sometimes.
The log flume you guys do over that?
Yeah, I got to do the log ride last year. It was a lot of fun.
How did you end up, moving into doing set dressing?
I had a friend who was in the department, and it seemed like they always were doing the fun stuff. like they were the ones in there, bringing the bodies in and getting to do all the cool gory scenes. And I just one year thought I would take a shot at it. And that department, they have a lot of artists and stuff in there, but they also needed a couple grunts to kind of get in and just like, consider loading in the mazes and just kind of moving stuff around. So my first job in props was kind of that, where we were doing more of the grunt work for the department.
And then
I kind of started to realize I have a little bit of an eye for this haunted house stuff. And then I kind of just started to take on a larger and larger role within that department.
Did you end up working underneath someone, one of the other artists? Was there a mentor in there somewhere that kind of took you under their wing and taught you the ropes? Or did you just kind of pick up stuff from everybody?
Well, what's really cool about Knott's is they primarily hire from within. So anyone that was above me kind of started where I was, and they have a really good culture of helping each other out and teaching everybody. When I got into that department, I had no experience in any of this, that kind of stuff, but I did learn mold making and casting and different mediums and materials to use for fabrication and even welding and all kinds of stuff that I had no experience in. So definitely learned a lot in my couple of years there. And then also doing the band stuff, I'm able to travel and meet a lot of other haunters and visit a lot of other locations and watching a lot of YouTube tutorials and all kinds of different stuff, just trying to kind of soak in as much knowledge about this industry as that I can.
What do you have the most fun doing?
I would say right now I'm in a pretty cool position where I'm art directing. So after I'm designing the mazes, I get to spend time with all of the departments and just kind of lending my vision to what the maze should be and working with everybody. So it's kind of the best of all worlds coming together there.
Which one are you working on now?
They haven't announced it yet, and I don't know when they're announcing the one that I'm currently doing. So can't quite talk about that one, but I've done handful of other ones in the past.
What were the ones that you worked on that?
Last year, I did a maze called Dark Ride, which was kind of a defunct carnival dark ride that had been abandoned and then taken. All the freaks and carnies and clowns were all kicked out, and being shunned by society, they came back and kind of created this refuge inside of this old, falling apart dark ride, which was a lot of fun. Did a maze called Paranormal Inc., which is kind of a spoof on ghost hunting TV shows, where if something actually happened and they actually did break down the dimensions between our world and the next, what that experience would be. I did a zombie laser tag experience called Special Ops Infected, where we handed guests laser tag equipment and sent them through this survival course, which is a lot of fun. And last year I also did a maze called Trick or Treat Lights Out, where we handed guests – we used the Gantam torch technology, and we handed guests flashlights, and they got to walk through through the maze with these flashlights that we were able to control.
Explain to me how those flashlights work.
They're capable off the shelf. They're capable of receiving an IR signal. So you're able to, through emitters, send signals out to manipulate the flashlights, whether it's changing colors, changing an effect on them, the brightness. They also have like a little vibration motor inside of them. So there's a lot of things you can do there. But what we did is we actually took out one of the little light bulbs and then we put in another IR emitter. So the flashlight's actually sending a signal as well. And we were using that to trigger effects throughout the maze. So that way, when guests got right in the perfect position, they'd shine their flashlight at this prop, we can then animate it. So we would get really cool timing off of those effects.
What kind of setup is that?
Yeah, so the flashlight would send the signal to the sensor, and then from the sensor would take it and send it to our control board. And then from that control panel, we can kind of send it off to whatever it's going to be, back to whatever effect it's going to trigger. So I believe that it all was ran through DMX.
Is it all automated, or are there also people pushing buttons behind the scenes, like watching on the closed circuit and hitting switches? Or
no, it's 100% automated.
Automated. I guess you don't want to leave it up to people screwing up or taking out of people's hands.
I mean, and sometimes there are a couple other mazes where we do have a control board in the back where we have techs watching, and we will give them a couple buttons of, you know, just to trigger a little air blast or something to kind of occupy them as they're sitting back there monitoring things. But for the most part, all of our experiences are fully automated.
How did the special ops work?
That was a 100% operational nightmare for the first couple of years. And there was nothing kind of like it at the time when we first did it. I think 4 or 5 years ago was the first year we did it on that large of a scale. So we kind of learned a lot of lessons those first couple of years. But we basically, each guest was given a laser tag gun. They were put in these squads of 8 to 10 people, and then they're paired up with squad leaders, which were our actors that would kind of lead them through the zombie apocalypse. And the first year we did it, we actually did it in an entire area of Camp Snoopy, which is like 6 acres. And it was massive. And that alone, when you spread out that many actors and guests and equipment that large of an area, it kind of gets a little tricky, especially with the high throughput numbers that we're trying to hit. So 2 years ago, we brought it backstage and we rebuilt out this whole facade little city. And then we were able to kind of contain things a little bit more. Our throughput numbers, we were able to kind of achieve a lot higher for the event that we're running. It's a lot of fun, a lot of really cool stuff that we learned. For being haunted attraction designers, we're always looking of how to distract the guests from the scares. And we noticed when you hand somebody a laser tag rifle, and ask them to shoot at things, that's the perfect distraction. So we're able to get a lot of really cool, unique scares. Yeah. And everybody, turns into Rambo at the same time, starts running through, and it's a lot of fun.
Can you get killed and be taken out like in paintball?
Yeah, once again, so I grew up playing paintball and all these things. So that's originally, we had all the stuff where you had to find like these ammo stashes, and you could get killed and then you can get respawned back to life. And we had all this really like fun gameplay stuff in order. And then we realized we couldn't even have a reload button on there because people couldn't figure it out. Like, the average person going through, like, they'd come out and say, my gun was broken. It's like, well, did you hit the reload button? Like, no. So we ended up having to just simplify it down to just a point and shoot thing. And the one thing we did come up with that was really cool was kill streak rewards. So like for every 10 zombies you shot, your gun would automatically upgrade and upgrade and upgrade until you – to I think the final weapon you could receive is like a ray gun, played off of Call of Duty zombies there. Mm-hmm. But to the other end of that, the zombies could emit a signal from their headbands that you're shooting at to count as bites. And if they would bite you enough times, your gun would reset back to the lowest level. So we weren't actually dying. It was kind of more of just like you're ranking up, I guess, and then you can get wiped back down to zero.
The haunts over there are just absolutely phenomenal. You had the Hayden Hall Sanitarium. Now, was that the paranormal investigation one?
Correct.
You have a team, like you have a couple of actors who are taking them through. So they're recording it as if they were like ghost hunters or whatever. And it's taking a crew of like 6 or 8 people along with them.
Yeah. So like the setup is there's this Paranormal Inc. TV show. And they think they have this amazing piece of equipment that is 100% going to, give them results. So they have brought in a live audience to kind of serve as an unbiased, a witness to this experiment. So we bring about 40 to 60 guests into this one large room at a time. which is we call the showroom, and then that's just kind of rigged from floor to ceiling and all these different cool special effects. We use a lot of video mapping. We have some stunt rigging in there, and then when the show goes live, they turn on what we call the ghost pod. And from there, this whole little show would play out. We'd have, you know, like I said, the spirits appearing through the walls, and we have a live actor fly across the room. We had moving gurneys that would track into the room. And what we were doing with all these moving pieces is naturally dividing the room in half, because from there, two doors would secretly open from the walls, and it would send you through two different paths through the maze that would then reconvene back in the middle, and then everybody would go out the same way. But it was this kind of cool choose-your-own-adventure, you know, high-stunt attraction.
What's the process like now at that level of trying to come up with something new, putting it all together? Like, I guess, obviously, doing it room by room, like set by set, room by room.
It kind of starts around October for the year before. So the idea is before Halloween hits that we have about three or four concepts that we all pitch. And then from there, the higher ups would like, you know, try to pick one for us to kind of send us off in the right direction. And then from there, once those concepts have all been kind of finalized, we start digging into them right away. And the goal is to have the entire maze designed, every single room, all the props, have all our different lists, whatever special effects we need, lighting, everything to be done before Transworld hits. That way we can go to Transworld and start, you know, putting in orders and sourcing things, and that kind of kicks off the whole production cycle for us.
How much of your fabrication team are, like, how much of it, some of the big animatronics and other special effects that you're doing are done in-house?
The majority of the larger animatronics are done in-house. Typically, I don't know, we pick up some of like the Gorgolore actormatronics, or we, you know, spend quite a bit of money with Ghost Ride every year on the higher end bodies and stuff. But for the most part, everything's done in-house. The larger animatronics, a lot of the bodies that we're using are life casted and you know, painted up and all that by our teams in-house. So I would say probably 90% of every attraction is built and created in-house, at least 90%.
Now, when it comes to designing, are you guys using software? I mean, obviously, you're not sketching the stuff out on bar napkins.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
No, it's Vectorworks is my big drafting program that I use, which is comparable to SketchUp.
Okay, got it.
It's CAD program, correct. Yeah, and then we have you know, a concept artist in house that use Photoshop and they create storyboards and different concept renderings for different set pieces or different animatronics we'd like to create.
So before any building gets done, you have to have the entire storyboard, so everything's complete, and you have to go through it step by step.
We hand over a complete full packet to them that has everything from the build elevations to the floor plans to the paint renderings, the storyboards to the different lists. And then from there, each department can break it down, and that way the carpenters can look at the build elevations, kind of break it down to what materials they need, and they can, you know, get everything pre-ordered and all that stuff. And also, just for, you know, budget reasons, they can kind of try and start forecasting their budgets based off of what we're giving them to see if we need to make any adjustments.
That was my next question. Are you responsible when you turn that in to have a kind of cost analysis with how much this is going to cost to do? So, okay.
No, but I mean, every year, like, if as designers, we try to actually not design with a budget in mind, you know, so we're not limiting ourselves before we even get started.
Yeah.
So usually there's a couple things that come back like, really? It's really what you want to do? That we have to kind of go back to the drawing board. And
how long does that process take on average? Is that like a 3, 4, 5 months? I would, like, what would it take you guys typically from scratch to turning in your entire packet?
Typically, yeah, it's about 3 to 4 months, I'd say, from the time we get the green light to when it's 100% done, about 3 to 4 months. And it could be faster, you know, but it also, you know, be nice to have even more time than that. But that's usually what we aim for.
You're doing some escape rooms as well. Is that right? You own your own? You branched out?
Correct. Yeah, I opened. I did open my own escape room called Black Market Escape Rooms. We have our first show. It's called Murder Co. We bill it as the first rated R escape room. We have that out in Upland, California.
The Murder Inc. It's like a one room.
It's the one experience. But it's pretty large footprint. It's about 1,200 square feet. Has 8 rooms in it. So it's kind of a hybrid of a haunted attraction slash escape room. But the idea is that it's this high society murder for sports ring that you've signed up to participate in. So when you show up into our lobby, you get to actually choose which killer you want to have as your host for the evening. And then you get taken into what we call the showroom, and you get to watch a live murder take place. And of course, that doesn't go according to plan. And that's when the twist happens and the escape portion of the event kicks in.
For that price, do you have do you go through each one of the 8 rooms, or you choose one of the 8 rooms to begin with?
No, yeah, the 8 rooms is all the one attraction, so you can go as far as you make it, basically.
So you,
and then if you get to the 8th room and solve the final puzzle, then you escape.
You get a pat on the head. You get a gold star on your forehead. There, you know, a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give you. Yeah. No. We have
give
a.
Give me a lollipop. Cool little, and,
yeah. Yeah.
I'm kidding. So. I'm just being a jackass. So, what do you get if you do complete all 8 rooms?
So we have two endings. If you succeed, you unlock this certain thing. I don't really want to spoil it too much, but it's a cool little exit out. And then from there, you get greeted back by the artist. You get made an honorary member for the evening. You get your picture, and then you leave. If not, we have a death sequence that you get taken into this other certain area. And we have another cool little gag that happens where you're quote unquote executed. You've been caught and killed by this Murico company. But we are controlling this game very closely. We have a pretty cool system that we use that allows us to kind of monitor, and we can help guests along, or we can slow them down. And we do like to try and get people to experience the entire thing, all 8 rooms, and preferably we want people to make it out and have fun with it. And if not, we just kill them.
So. Or you just die. So how's the band? You have Winds of Plague as your band. How often are you guys?
Yes.
Do you guys tour the local area? Do you go out of state?
We tour out quite a bit. So that used to be my full time gig, and then Haunting was my side thing, and then that kind of, those roles kind of reversed, where I'm now doing the haunt stuff year round full time, and then the band stuff we just kind of do every couple months. We play a couple local shows. You know, we tend now to stick more to the West Coast, but we did just make it out to the East Coast about 2 months ago. We were out that way.
Yeah, where'd you play?
And we tried to pick up some. Out in your area, we played Worcester.
Yeah, Worcester.
That's how you say that.
The big woo. Yeah, that's how you say it.
Yeah. Yeah, we played the Palladium out there, the New England Hardcore Metal Festival.
Cool.
A lot of fun. Yeah, and I went to this it was supposed to be billed as the world's like largest Halloween store.
Yeah, the one. Yeah.
I do not think that's a true statement.
It's the largest one in Worcester.
Yeah, there you go.
they omit that last part.
Yeah.
It's not even that far from my house. It's maybe a little over an hour drive. I still have never been to it. So
I remember seeing it on some like Travel Channel show, and I was like, oh, we got to go over there, and then it was.
It was
all right.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm a sucker for any Halloween stuff at any time of the year, so that was cool. But it was an expensive Uber ride for that. That's all.
You know, next time you see that on the Travel Channel, you can throw your beer can at the TV and go, "That's not a piece of shit."
I've been there. It's a lie.
It's a total sham. It's a sham. Before we wrap up and let you go, because I'm always. You know, the set dressing and the, you know, that type of the prop building are always the things that I love to work on and things that I love to talk about. Any little tips, tricks, techniques, things that you've learned from dressing a set that you can maybe share with us?
One thing I learned that a really cool like blood, and I don't know. I mean, this could be common knowledge among haunters. I don't know. I haven't seen it come up too much, but there's a really cool blood formula where you take any kind of clear coat in a can, and you just mix in like different food colorings, like go heavy with red, a little bit of blue or green, and you get a really nice cheap perma blood, if you will, where you know you can put it on and it stays and looks wet, has a nice finish to it, but it's a fraction of the cost.
So food coloring and clear coat.
Yeah, I want to say we typically use glidden clear coat, just whatever clear coat you can find, and then we buy the really large bottles of food coloring. And we put in a shit ton of red, and then just a little couple drops of blue. You got to be careful with it so it doesn't go purple. But mix that up, and we throw that stuff everywhere. That's what we go to for our economy blood, and then we'll use perma blood or something else for the more prominent spots. But if you just need to make a big bloody mess, that clear coat stuff works really well.
That's awesome. I've never come across that. So
yeah, I think I saw Alan Hopps do a tutorial using glue, like a clear glue, and it's the same idea, except this is paint, so it won't wash off.
That's exactly what I was looking for. Man.
Good.
You got one. Give me one more of those. Give me one more tidbit.
Well, I'm just on that same note with the clear coat stuff. I mean, you can use it. Same thing. You put green in it and make it slime. We do black and have it dripping off of pipes and stuff, and you get a cool rust look with it. You know, it just adds a nice wet look to that kind of stuff. But let me see. Let me think. There's another alternative to Vacuform that we came across that I really like. It's called Pulp Art, pulpartsurfaces.com, and it's the same idea as Vacuform, but it's made out of cardboard, and it's awesome. Like, this stuff's great. It's very easy to work with. The pieces that they make all interlock, so you don't have these weird seams, or you don't have to make your own seams. But that's another really, really cool product that we came across that we use on everything.
Before I let you go, there's actually a couple of kind of exciting things that are going on for you right now as well. You were just working on a theme park in Indonesia, is that right?
Yeah, I currently am working on two. There's a theme park company out there that are opening two new theme parks in Indonesia, and doing permanent year-round haunted attractions for them right now.
Now, do you actually have to go there, or are you just doing all the work, kind of being able to do the design process and ship it over, or do you have to be in Indonesia?
I'm working on this remotely at the moment, but we have started discussing myself and a couple other members of the team going over there when they start building to help art direct, project manage.
Don't spit on the streets over there, by the way.
Is that a thing?
You'll get caned. Be careful.
Okay. I'll remember that.
Say, hey, I remember Chris Baker told me something.
And something about I should spit on the street. It's a sign of respect, I believe.
Oh, yeah. And the other big news, talk about Queen Mary's Dark Harbor.
Yeah, so very excited about this. I got brought on as the production designer for Queen Mary's Dark Harbor for the entire event. So I'm working on six haunted attractions for them. And I don't know how familiar you are with that event, but one of their big things is it's a pretty big drinking event. And they actually have 13 themed bars. So I'm also designing those as well.
Now you're talking my language. Yeah, you're talking my language, Johnny. That must be a massive undertaking. How do you freaking get anything? So wait a minute. Are you doing Queen Mary's and now you're still working for Knott's as well? Or did you have to leave Knott's to go to Queen
Mary's?
So
I left Knott's the beginning of this year. Because I wanted to go do the escape room thing. And I just kind of wanted to try out a few other things, which I ended up pretty much leaving Knott's with the contract in hand to design it as an independent contractor. And then from there, a couple months later, I met with the Queen Mary folks, and we hit it off, and ended up they ended up hiring me to do their event as well. So I'm actually doing both of those events, as well as Indonesia, as well as the escape room and the band, and I have a 2-year-old. So it's a busy time for me at the moment.
Are you happy though?
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. And that's, I think as stressful as it is doing it, I think I'd be, you know, more bummed out or even more stressed if I said no, because I would be saying, oh, I could be doing this. So making it all work, making it all happen, putting in the hours, putting in the work, and hopefully be able to enjoy it quite a bit here in a few months. Right now, I'm also part of this, the Queen Mary job is I'm running the art crew there. So same thing, the set dressing. So I'm back to doing that. And I'm there 40 hours a week working with that team. And that, you know, leads right up until that opens in September. And then usually I have a nice little break in October where I can actually go and travel and enjoy a bunch of different haunts and enjoy all the festivities of the Halloween season. And then I hope there's some downtime here in November in talking about doing some band stuff, but no, probably not, and probably just keep on keeping on.
So outside of Knott's, what are some of your favorite haunts to hit that are somewhat local to you or within a drive?
Oh man, we have an event called Delusion out here, which is phenomenal. They rent out these different cool historic locations all throughout LA, and they put on these really, really elaborate immersive experiences. They always have a really cool storyline, and lots of stunt rigging and special effects, and that's just a really neat, unique independent haunted attraction company called Delusion. And then also, you know, I always go to Universal and get to check out all those cool IP attractions. Reign of Terror is another really good independent haunt out this way. We have Sinister Point coming back, which is good. But I've done a lot of traveling and I've seen a lot of really great haunts throughout the country. So there's a lot of really cool companies doing a lot of really cool stuff out there.
Sounds like you got to get your resume posted to monster.com because you're not busy enough. So I don't want to hold you up so you can get that taken care of. Don't forget, cover letter is important. The cover letter is extremely important. All right.
Yeah, you know, I think after this season, I'm just gonna throw it all to the side and just drive Uber because that seems a lot less stressful at the moment.
Thanks for carving out a few valuable minutes out of your schedule.
Now, I'm a big fan of the show. You know, it always helps get me in the mood to work on this stuff. So I appreciate it, and it's an honor to be on the show, man. Thank you.
Oh man. The honor is all on this side of the table.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, brother. We'll catch you around the net.
All right, Chris, thanks.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing HauntCast with all your haunt and Halloween brethren. Until next time. Stay scary.